Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, I'm going to call the roll.
Yes. Mr. Adams?
Present.
Mr. Batsel?
Here.
Mr. Gibney?
Here.
Mr. Greiner?
Here.
Mr. Howell?
Here.
Mr. Kesselwing?
Here.
Mr. Schott? We have a quorum, sir.
Okay, very good. Want to read the agenda notes?
Yes. Cases heard by the Planning and Zoning Commission will be presented to City Council in accordance with the schedule provided after each case in the agenda. Please note that the City Council meetings will begin at 4 o'clock p.m. and are held at City Hall, City Council Chamber, second floor, located at 110 Southeast Wachula Avenue.
Thank you. Everybody a chance to look at the minutes from last meeting? If so, discussions or motions?
Make a motion to approve.
Got a motion for approval?
I'll second.
A second from Mr. Howell. So, call the roll.
Mr. Adams?
Aye.
Mr. Howell?
Aye.
Mr. Batsel?
Aye.
Mr. Gibney?
Aye.
Mr. Kesselwing?
Aye.
Mr. Greiner?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Very good. All right, getting right into it then. Public hearing, PHR 13-0003.
Good evening, Patty Hitchcock on behalf of the Cedar Calibre Management Department. Last year, we amended the code to allow the keeping of livestock as within the single-family zoning districts in the city, subject to a public hearing with limitations on the types of animals and the density of animals. This is our first request for the use. The property is about 73 acres, almost 74 acres, and was formerly part of the Bell Chase subdivision. We amended that PUD several months ago. The property is now in a single ownership with the proposal to construct really a, I would call it a gentleman's farm with a single family home and a barn and a caretaker's house. The applicant proposed the keeping of 15 horses on the property. The code amendment that we adopted last year would allow up to 29 horses. The density for horses and cows is 2.5 acres for each animal. Goat or sheep is 3 acres. Three goat or sheep per acre. Pigs are not allowed, and any poultry it would be limited to no more than 25 birds. And again, that would not allow any roosters, cocks, cockerels, or capons of any species on the property. With the property being 73 acres, it's quite large. Access will be from 52nd Street. Staff did not see a need to further restrict the request from what the code would allow. And so we recommend approval that they be allowed to keep livestock in accordance with the city regulation 122-1221.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for staff? Okay, thank you. Is the petitioner here?
Good afternoon. Fred Roberts, 333 Northwest 3rd Avenue, here on behalf of the applicant. Here to answer any questions. We had come before this board several months ago to remove the property from the PUD and change the zoning classification in anticipation of this. We had discussed this at that time. The intent of the owner is to construct a single family residence, and a gentleman's farm would be the correct way. Ms. Hitchcock just described a gentleman's farm would be the correct way to do it. There will be a barn, several stalls. The number of horses is going to be substantially less than what's permitted. 15 was a number that was used as sort of a worst case scenario for a very short period of time. Obviously, they're constructing a 12 stall barn, or 11 stalls, I actually believe, with one stall being for whatever they do with horses, washing and storage of things. So that would be the maximum number, but there would be, I guess, periods where for a show they would bring in an extra horse or two for that type of eventing. I think that's pretty common. But there would be no contemplated scenario where they would have that many horses at this time, but that is the intent for be a gentleman's farm, no commercial operations, only horses to be used by the property owners in connection with their personal use training operations for themselves.
Good. Any questions?
Has the owner discussed how much clearing would be anticipated? He would expect to, you know, how much of the woods he would plan on clearing?
Well, there is a concept plan on file with the city now. I actually don't have a copy of it, but it's very large. But the clearing, I believe, has been, for the most part, done. And there's a very, very wide buffer between where any equine activities would take place and any surrounding property owner or the road. In fact, it is definitively the owner's intent that no one know, you know, what they're doing, and they don't know what anybody else is doing. So it is on the concept plan, which I've sat down with city staff on. There is a large buffer shown and actually on the ground today. So.
Okay. Would it be appropriate to ask staff a question at this point?
Sure.
What is permitted as far as, this is 70 plus acres?
73 and change.
69 acres. Zoned R1?
Yep.
How much could they clear by code?
Well, they...
All of it?
Yeah, they could clear a lot of it. They actually went, their landscape...
Without a tree removal permit, though, I mean...
Their landscape architect...
3 acres.
Yeah, their landscape architect went out with a member of our staff. And they looked at areas on the interior, as Mr. Roberts stated. They did very selective clearing. Their intent was to keep large buffers at the perimeter, but also to try to keep some of the trees on the interior part of the site. They've done some of the clearing instead of some of the, they're getting ready to, I think, for one building.
And all of that clearing was done pursuant to a tree removal
permit. They got a permit to do it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks.
The condition of that removal permit is that it was done under the supervision of their arborist or landscape architect.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you. I answers that question.
Absolutely.
Good. Anything else?
I'm available for any other questions that may come up. Thank you.
Okay. Okay. We're going to open it up for a public discussion. If you have anything to say for or against this, step forward and state your name and address for the record.
Okay, that's it.
Gail Colby, 5113 Southeast 4th Street, Ocala. I have a problem with bringing more animals over near the springs. I mean, nitrates, they've already removed trees. Now they want to bring animals. What's their plan for cleanup of all this manure that's going to be? The other concern is that he just said something about horse shows. Is that going to congest the area with traffic?
I don't think he meant on that property. I think they meant bringing horses to Ocala to then take to a horse show. Is that correct, Mr. Rowe?
That is correct.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. That's my only concern.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Just state your name and address for the record, please.
My name is Jacqueline Brown, 1911 Southeast 52nd Street, Ocala. And I may have mentioned this at previous meetings before. My one concern is really not the presence of horses, which are wonderful, but what is, in this case, the runoff going to be? Because we're the notch at the bottom, as is our two neighbors, the Culbreths and the Wests. And when that comes down the hill, my concern is that manure, and also when you have horses, you have to spray them for mosquitoes and flies and so forth. Where is that runoff going? Is there going to be a diversion? How is this going to run? Because I don't want it in my well water.
Okay.
That's my concern.
Just based on a little knowledge of that type of operation, I would think that the horses are going to be in the stalls most of the time, and mm-hmm. the stalls are going to be cleaned, and that manure is going to be put right into a bin of some kind, probably. Mr. Roberts, I don't know if I'm speaking out of turn, but...
No, I think that's 100% correct. There will be, as it required, I think, there will be professional hauling.
It's not the hall, that's somewhat reassuring.
Yes,
and
I would.
And any other runoff that would come would be, just as long as it doesn't go into the aquifer, into the well water.
Yes, I would be I would be shocked if they tried to just pile it up somewhere and not have it hauled off, so.
Fred, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe the barn is in this northern area?
Well, barn is, it's actually, I think, just slightly south of that, right there. So it'd be, and these, probably at least 10 acres of property is not at all intended for any development whatsoever. And there's actually between any development of agricultural properties, in the south central portion of the property is a statutory wetland covered by Water Edge District easement. So that will be preserved by an entirely another authority that's going to make sure that's maintained and not disrupted.
So runoff won't seep down into the aquifer and?
I mean, I can't say that 100% for sure, but I wouldn't think so, but.
And the same, it will be like a paddock, a pasture usually with horses, you have to, so the manure will be cleaned up there as well, not just the barn?
I wouldn't imagine they're going to be outside too much, other than just doing their training. So they're going to be in the stall, I would think. They're show horses, correct?
Correct, yeah, very
High-end show horses, so they're going to be in their stalls and pampered. They're probably going to be taken care of better than you and me.
I bet. There you go. So, but in terms of their exercising, just being put out to, you know, graze and so forth and exercise, when we're talking about as many as maybe 15 horses, as opposed to, let's say, the 3 or 4 mini horses that we first talked about at the early meetings, that's a somewhat different configuration. That's what I was concerned about.
Okay.
So if the owner is going to be taking care of that, so it doesn't affect the neighbors, then it's all good.
Okay.
All
right, thank you. Anyone else from the public? Okay, we're going to close that off and bring it back to the board for any further questions or motions.
Where is the well field? We've got a well field right there, don't we?
It's across. It's to the.
Is it on the north side of Roosevelt?
It's back on 441, yeah, back to.
Is it kind of up the top of the picture up there?
It's back to the, yeah, it'd be in the northeast. This is all, the thing that, what you see on this is Roosevelt Village, a big part of Bell Chase. So you'd have to continue.
This is what we're looking at here.
It's kind of north and maybe a little bit east.
Yeah.
I mean, west.
And it's in a, it'd be in a different watershed. I mean, this one, this hill, I think, goes south, and most of this water comes from the south. And there's a ridge that's farther.
That's this.
Farther to north.
Okay. Yeah, I'm a little bit out of memory on that. Where I was going probably is, and that's okay, you can come up if you want. I would, you know, since it's a public hearing, and I think there's a valid use. I think there's some valid concerns that go along with it, and I probably would support approving it with the condition of having a manure disposal plan approved. I'm not sure who it would be approved by. I know that the extension has looked at a lot of the big horse farms, and you know, this is 73 acres. They've looked at, you know, Steinbrenner and Weber's over 6,000 acres, and this is not, you know, that big of a deal, but because of the proximity, I'm sure that they'll have a disposal plan. Just getting it reviewed and approved by necessary agency or, you know, that sort of thing would be maybe something worth considering.
I do believe there's DEP regulation relating to the removal of equine waste. And I think that would be something they would which requires the storage and then removal of it, as opposed to, as is common practice, killing trees with it.
Yeah, since I'm not familiar with the specifics on that, I'm not comfortable just kind of leaving it wide open without saying there's a condition that there's got to be an approved manure disposal plan and chemical use plan as far as, you know, any chemicals used on or around the horses, that sort of thing, fertilizers, and, you know, and maybe DEP would be a necessary agency. So given the fact that you're already going to, that the buyers are already going to probably have a plan, I'm just saying I would like to put a condition on there that that plan will be approved by the appropriate agency, whether it be DEP or the Water Management District or whoever.
Phil, I was going to say, you know, the county's got best management practices for horse farms and how to take care of all those things.
Right.
And, you know, I guess the city doesn't have that because we've never had this kind of use in the city.
Right.
So I was going to say, if you were going to require something, I don't think that there's anything really from DEP necessarily that really that you have to get permitted from.
And kind of getting on your point there, I mean, it's best management practices, but it's not necessarily a protocol or you know.
I mean, they do have standards set up of how you do disposal of manure and all those kind of things. I would say that if you wanted to refer back to something, you could refer back to the best management practices already developed.
Roberts. I would imagine with the wetlands on site, I mean, have you gone through all this before with having to deal with the Water Management District, with the runoff from the farm?
There's no requirement because there won't be any operation that I'm aware of or been made aware of, because they'll be dealing with the operations completely internally. You know, the property owners actually already operate a similar horse farm that they're in the process of selling to move to here. Frankly, to get in with this within the city limits of Cala, and for the benefits that we're all aware of. So I think they already likely comply with those best management practices as established for the county. If there was any adverse impact, it would be subject to the conservation easement that's already in place, and the reporting standards that are already there, which they purchased subject to. So that will be dealt with, as would be any other use of the property, just the requirement for maintaining that, be it agricultural or otherwise, residential or any other use. So that is not something that's really been addressed specifically, because it's more of it's a little bit broader in scope even than, you know, the equine use. It's for all uses. They'll be required to maintain that in the way in which it's required.
Well, I've been on a lot. My reason for concern is I've been on a lot of horse farms, and I've seen on the back of the farm where there are just huge, you know, piles of manure that have been stacking up for years. And there's, you know, obviously the county's not requiring anything, the state's not requiring anything. I'm not comfortable just opening the door saying, well, everybody will do what's best. I think that if the owner is already anticipates doing what's best, just putting it on paper, finding out the right agency to take it through to get some kind of a seal of approval, or an environmental engineer that would do the same.
Right, Mr. Howe, I don't think that there is like an establishment that I'm aware of a planning system. There are essentially laws on the books, and I've had the misfortune of having to deal with DEP on farm transactions where the people weren't complying with those laws on the books, and people do get notices, you are not complying, fix it or else, is sort of how the notice goes. So it's not a plan that's established, it's more laws on the books, comply. There are a number of services as it relates specifically to manure in the county that farm operations use, that they maintain those and have regular removals. These folks are not operating, this is not gonna be a commercial farming operation, this is going to be a rather upscale home that just coincidentally, one of the people who live in the home, the wife, is going to want to have her horses in proximity because this is what she does, you know, this is what she does with her time. So I think the biggest people that will be concerned with the storage and removal and proper practices related to the property will be the property owner themselves, because they're going to have the biggest investment, both financially and in time, of anyone in the year, frankly. And so that will be a safeguard. But the other safeguard is, it's quite literally, I think, laws on the books as to how they are required to deal with those issues. And these folks will certainly deal with them in the appropriate manner.
Mr. Batzel, you got a question?
Well, I was just going to comment. I mean, I agree with your sentiment completely, but we need to be careful for a number of reasons, conditioning approval on some kind of clearance. But if we do, we need to specify what it's, you know, what exactly we're pointing to set that standard. Because, and you know, if I'm guessing, and I'm, you know, talking out of ignorance, but I don't know what those DEP laws on the books are, what they specify, whether they're, I would assume there's probably a threshold for their application, and a small residential tract like this, not small, but you know, a residential tract with only a few or 15 horses may not trigger application of those standards. Something like the county best practices may be fine, but we need to be careful conditioning approval upon a precondition, especially when we don't know if this is a process that may take years to get approval from the state on, for the sake of the property owner, in my opinion.
Well, since it's a public hearing, we can put conditions on it. But yeah, we need to know what those conditions are. So I would probably be...
There's a reason why we didn't put conditions on it. Part of the reason was that, you know, primarily it's still a residential use. The number of horses that are going to be allowed on aren't like a typical working horse farm like Ocala Stud or Red Oak Farm, and it's not the same amount of clearing that's going to take place. The thing was that originally it was planned for 70 to 80 houses that would have allowed a lot more clearing. And by comparison, someone else may know this better than me, but it seemed to me probably more allowed fertilizers and things like that on improved lawns. And so we thought that it was, our opinion was that it was going to be a minimal impact as compared to the potential impact of those 70 or 80 homes.
And I agree with it, because I think they're much more careful on a farm with their application of fertilizer. And that's not a big thing for me, because professionals usually, you know, apply fertilizers professionally. Probably my concern is, if you had 70 or 80 houses, they've got a garbage truck moving through there once or twice a week. Mm-hmm. With the number of horses you're looking at putting there and no assurance of horse manure being moved, you could have stockpile of horse manure in the back 5 acres of that 73 acres for quite a long period of time. That does have an impact on the aquifer and on the city well site. So I think just pretty much a simple plan as far as the removal of the horse manure is the main concern.
A condition could reasonably be placed, if necessary, compliance with state law relating to removal of, you know, of refuse and waste. I mean, and that I think would get, you know, the only way that they would run afoul of, I think, the spirit of your concern would be if they actually run afoul of the law. So from my perspective, and as it relates to horse manure, the condition is already in place with probably some...
I don't know if there is, I don't know what it is. So, and I'm acting irresponsibly if I have a concern and I'm just going to assume my way, you know, to oblivion. So I'm not going to assume anything. I want to know. I'm supportive of the horse farm, don't get me wrong.
Sure.
There's a concern there that I don't see as a huge obstacle to making sure that concern is addressed. So.
Well, I think Mr. Kesselring's statement was a solid one to kind of rely on. But you know, if there was to be a condition in that regard, like I said, I would reiterate the condition is is sort of established, I think, at law. However, you know, to say, to require a plan to be approved by someone when, to my knowledge, there's not an agency that approves plans would be kind of an obstacle that would be difficult, if not impossible, to overcome.
We could possibly table it then.
Well,
There's one other, the ordinance requires, it does have requirements for storage of manure. It states that manure shall not be allowed to accumulate, causing a nuisance or hazard to the health, welfare, or safety of humans or animals.
There you go.
And it all, and then goes further to state that the outside storage of manure piles, 2 cubic yards or greater, shall not be permitted within 200 feet of any plot line or residence. So those are the two requirements within
the code. Will that satisfy you?
No more than,
That language was lifted from best management practices and ordinances from, I use Marion County quite a lot.
That language is from the Marion County best management practices.
Yeah, do you want,
I'm just wondering, it says, shall not be allowed to accumulate. What is considered an accumulation? Is it, you know, 2 cubic yards or 200 cubic yards?
I think that if there's an accumulation, that's either there's a complaint from a neighbor, then that would be considered to be perhaps a nuisance that would require
But somebody's got to, but you don't have any criteria in order for somebody
or
to
if it's,
make
or
that
if
determination.
Or if it's a foul of what would be allowed by, excuse me, by DEP.
And
that's what we do as attorneys, Phil. We got to argue about
well,
what the word means.
And what we do is, you know, typically we don't serve, we return serve. And so nuisance is someone complains and we go and determine whether it's valid or not. I think that if it's, you know, if there are large piles, mountains of manure.
I don't think that we would
we have
consider
a nuisance.
That. You know, if I had that behind my house, what's hazardous? I can just pile my garbage behind my house. You know, at what point is it not appropriate or is it hazardous? But I'm just saying that if there's no criteria and you're relying on an individual, who is the individual and does that amount vary depending on who the individual is that goes out and visits the site? You don't have any objective criteria. That's not.
But the problem you have on the other side, though, is you're putting a stipulation on this without any criteria on your end. I mean, what if there isn't anything to quantify?
Well, I'm happy to come back and look at it next month and come up with let staff do some research, find out what's out there, and see if there is some objective criteria to use. Is there a reason why why it has to be, you know, it's now or never, tonight? Or?
Well, the only reason from the property owner's perspective is they would like to commence with this project there. You know, it's and was so that would be the reason from our perspective is why we prefer not to table it, obviously.
I think if there had been criteria readily available and ordinances, similar ordinances in other jurisdictions, we would have included it.
Well, I think it's careless just to go in with absolutely no boundaries at all, no criteria, no scope, there's nothing comparable, and it's just whatever somebody is going to decide at any given time. So I don't know how government operates that way, really. But
Mr. Hall, to me, it does in some extent.
And what protection adjacent homeowners have to that type of governance. So now the board, I'm just one member of the board, so
sure.
I've said what I'm going to say, and the board can.
Well, I would like to leave the answer. It would be similar, I think, in some respects to certain elements of the code relating to maintenance and condition of other properties, where there is some, in certain respects, some latitude given to code enforcement officers relating to condition of property. I mean, they are not all, grass height is not always, you know, for example, there are certain latitudes given within our code
To the staff. And I'm well aware of that, but there's also standards as well. And there's no standard to go by here.
There is a standard in the code. There's a standard in the code. It's not allowed to be accumulated, causing a nuisance or hazard to the health, welfare, or safety of humans or animals.
What's an accumulation, Pete?
Well,
is it 2 yards or 200 yards? What's an accumulation?
I'm sure that it's 200, but I'm not sure that it's 2.
Okay, well, I'm just saying that you know, the person with 198 yards of horse manure in their backyard, you know, that's, you know, 100 or 200 feet from their house, probably, you know, would appreciate having, you know, the planning and zoning commission give some thought to it to set some maximum there, some range. So,
well, and I would just put forth that, you know, there's also years and years of common law that relates to nuisance and how to what constitutes a nuisance.
There's
and
a lot of
whether
nuisances
it's
going
odor
on
or an adverse impact on the aquifer.
No recourse.
Okay.
Regarding.
Well, I would
legal recourse.
I would respectfully disagree and just say that if there's a foul odor to a certain extent causing an adverse impact or, you know, damage to the aquifer that can be shown or, you know, the host of other concerns. And your current concerns are absolutely valid in my mind, and I couldn't agree with you more. I think it's a little bit beyond our purview to discuss, you know, how detailed the code should dig in as it relates to.
I thought that was our purview. So,
well, of course, you know, there's no one size fits all code, and the more you draft a detailed code, the more you run into circumstances that it just doesn't fit. So they have to back off a little bit and allow a little bit of latitude in terms of what an accumulation is, what a nuisance is, and if there are any neighboring property owners who have a problem with the smell, which I think could be a problem on a larger operation.
It's the neighboring property owner's responsibility to hire the lawyer, to make the complaint, to go to court, and to bear the cost of prosecuting that. So,
I still think this is all tempered by the fact that we're talking about 15 horses and a maximum of 29 horses on a 74-acre parcel. We're not talking about a commercial operation.
So
backing out of
the
higher theoretical argument, I mean, I think practically speaking, we're talking about.
It should be easy to write up a disposal plan that gives quantities and let the property owner do it and say, this is what we're gonna do and how we're gonna do it. The city say, yeah, okay, run it by and approve it. I mean, I don't see where the huge burden is being put on the applicant in order to get this thing approved.
And I agree, but there's nobody at the city who reviews manure disposal plans. And I think that as we get into placing a condition on approval that requires them to run down to City Hall and turn in a manure disposal plan, who do they give that to?
Maybe,
who approves
maybe.
It? Who has authority to sign off on it? You know, I mean, it just gets technical once we start placing conditions, and it's difficult. So we either need to find an objective standard to place that condition upon, or trust the code.
There you go, an objective standard. The code's supposed to be the objective standard. It doesn't provide that. So,
Mr. Kessler?
Having said on the county commission when we reviewed this out of the county, the reason why there's not a definitive number is because it changes from farm to farm, from area to area,
right.
And that's why they came up with that language that does not give those definitive quantities. I just don't know how you're going to do that, except for, in a broader sense, you give code enforcement that opportunity to be able to make the determination.
Which it sounds like they have.
Yeah. I mean, if it doesn't meet, you know, those kind of requirements, I think that is grounds for a determination whether that's a code enforcement issue.
Right. I agree. All right. So we have a motion.
I make a motion to approve as recommended by staff.
Okay. Got a motion?
Second.
And a second. Any more discussion?
I'll just say, you know, I voted against the code change in the first place because of some of the issues that were brought up tonight. So I'm going to be voting against it because I just don't think that needs to be
Call the roll.
Mr. Gibney?
Aye.
Mr. Batzel?
Aye.
Mr. Adams?
Aye.
Mr. Howell?
No.
Mr. Kesselring?
No.
Mr. Greiner?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you.
Okay, all right. Moving on to the PUD amendment, PUD 13-0002.
Hattie Hitchcock again. We have an existing assisted living facility, Hawthorne Village, out on Southwest 42nd Street. And they recently built an independent living facility on this property. They also constructed, go back to the arrow, they also constructed a new building, which I don't think is shown on this aerial, but roughly in this location, which was an expansion of the assisted living facility. Within that particular building, they have some additional beds, a dining area, and a rehab area where they do, if someone who's living there needs rehabilitation, there's a physical therapist that can come work with them, a fitness person that can work with them. Experience in my family, my mother had fallen and broken her leg and could no longer live at home alone, so she lived temporarily at an assisted living facility and received rehab there until she could return to her own home. What's happened in this area, this is the main entrance to the dining area, and the rehab entrance is a separate entrance here. They had requested signage for bounce back rehab for their patients that have been with them and then had the ability to go home. But they do come and maintain that relationship with their physical therapist at bounce back rehab. There may be also some outpatient therapy of persons that have never been a resident of Hawthorne Village. That use is not allowed by the PUD that was approved, and so they've come back to us and asked to have that outpatient therapy approved in this location. Really is a fairly small use. It is allowed under our PUD ordinance, and we recommend approval.
Any questions for staff? Phil? Okay. Is the petitioner here?
Hey, good evening. My name is Davis Dinkins, 2201 Southeast 30th Avenue. Ms. Hitchcock did a good job of explaining the request, so unless there's any questions, I'll just let's wait.
Wait a minute. Any questions? All right.
I'm going to disclose for the record. I'm not going to bow out of voting, but I am going to disclose for the record that I did do some work for the applicant on the development of the expansion. That's been probably a couple of years ago. So, but there's no further connection or financial benefit whatsoever.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
Just so that's on the record.
All right. Okay. Again, we're going to open up for public discussion. Step forward if you have anything to say for or against. Nope. Okay. Bring it back to the board.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move approval as recommended by staff.
Okay. Got a motion for approval?
A second.
And a second. Call the roll.
Mr. Kesselring?
Aye.
Mr. Howell?
Aye.
Mr. Adams?
Aye.
Mr. Batzel?
Aye.
Mr. Gibney?
Aye.
Mr. Greiner?
Aye.
Motion carries.
There we go. Okay. Now, ZON 13-0009.
Patty Hitchcock again. This is a request for rezoning of a little over 2 acres from R3 multifamily to B2 community business. The underlying land use on the property is low intensity. The property, the building on the property was constructed as a single family home in about 1954, and it was used as a single family home until 1993. In late 1992, the city approved a special exception to allow the property to be used as a professional or business office with a site plan required to put in the commercial parking. And the Beacon Realty Group was located on that property from 1993 to 2008. In about 2003, there was another tenant there. It was used as an administrative office for a contractor. And it's presently, we have two business tax certificates on the property for a contractor's office, as well as administrative office for auto sales. They were interested in using this as a used car dealership. That's not allowed. The B2 zoning that's proposed also will not allow that. It would only allow a small commercial center. And staff recommends approval of the rezoning. It is on 14th Street, fairly close to the intersection with Silver Springs Boulevard. There is commercial across the street. That particular stretch of 14th Street is predominantly business or industrial. And we would recommend approval, although they will need to come to us for site plan review and approval. And as part of that, I think the main issues they're going to have to address is, one, how do they access 14th Street? Stormwater, on-site drainage retention, as well as buffers. It is adjacent on its north side, east side, and west side to residential, which will require 10 feet of landscaping with a wall or 25 feet of landscaping to provide the buffer to the residential. Be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for staff?
Mr. Chairman, there were two letters of opposition that you have.
Oh, yes,
that
right.
Were laid on your. There's you, actually yeah. One from the last case and two from this case.
Yes, sorry, didn't make mention of that. I think it's the top one was from the last case and the other two were from this one.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, is the petitioner here?
My name is Pete Zarcone, 2651 Southeast 40th Street.
Do you have anything to add to what she, what Ms. Hitchcock?
Well, we plan to put a small, family-oriented type of retail, small retail shops, you know, ice cream shop, sandwich shop. Just make it family friendly, basically, is what we're looking to do.
Okay.
No car dealership.
How big a building? I mean, you plan on being able to get it all on there?
Oh, yeah, I guess. We've got using the city's the city's requirements that we need to have. Yeah, we're well in within the boundary.
How would something like that be configured on that site? I mean, obviously, I would assume that the concern with the neighbors is the fact that that site is rectangular and goes farther north than it does east and west.
Right.
I would think if it was long east and west and very more narrow, it wouldn't be as big of a concern. But obviously, it's adjacent to some houses on the west side, and I would think, and some on the north side. So, I guess my question is. Is the center going to be kind of configured in like a north-south direction or like an east-west?
It's going to be L-shaped, like an L-shaped plaza.
Okay.
On the opposite side from the residential area.
So kind of like a 7.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah. With a terrace in the front, covered terrace in the front.
Is there a something in the back of this site? Is there like a low area in the back of this site?
Yes. Okay. It drops to the back.
Okay. So it
the retention area would be in the back.
Yeah, so it wouldn't go all the way back to the.
Nowhere near.
Okay.
Like a third of the front, and that'd be fine.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what I was getting
at. Yeah, there's 2.5 acres. It's pretty good size. Yeah.
Yeah. So it would be more in the front third to half
in
of the
front,
property.
Correct. Retention area in the back. And leaving a lot of the trees all the way around it, actually.
Okay.
I want to leave as many trees as we can.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Any more questions?
Yeah. Were there any concerns with staff about driveway access? Seems like there's a lot of curb cuts right there, short distance from each other.
Yeah, there are concerns. As Ms. Hitchcock said, they'll have to come in with a full plan, access plan. They have access to a non-residential use now. I don't know, you know, we can't really quantify at this point. We know that they're going to need an access point. It's going to be a commercial driveway.
The access point that's there, looking at the aerial, is roughly aligned with the one across the street. Looks to have the close to the side setback requirement for a commercial driveway.
And there's a short directional, it looks like there's a very short center turn lane in there.
Okay, thanks.
We plan to widen the entry, so it'll be one in, one way in, one way out.
Do you get a question?
No.
No.
Not for him at this point.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to open this up to the public. Please step forward and state your name and address for the record.
My name is Chuck Pardee. I reside at 2769 Northeast 32nd Place. First off, I want to say I'm disappointed that no people born in Ocala are on this board. And I'm sure that I'm kidding around. When you're in diapers, y'all live behind us. Your dad did. So. And Andy's, you know, Andy's older than me. So, no, I'm kidding. We own the 3.5 acres zone B2 across the street, and we had it rezoned about 3 or 4 years ago, maybe. I'm not sure what it was, but ours was against R1 property there, and we had no opposition at that time. And the city rezoned it, and I'm here to say that I am in favor of these people rezoning their property. I think that there's the intent when 14th Street was built was to make it a traffic corridor, okay? And they finally understood that, hey, you're going to have some businesses along 14th Street, and they started allowing for businesses to come up. We own quite a few parcels of B2 property, including the strip center down the street. But I wanted to let you know that we are in favor of these people rezoning that property.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Good evening. I'm Shirley Ram, and I reside at 1410 Northeast 32nd Terrace. I do represent the homeowners of Paradise Trails, which is a subdivision directly behind this property. And the way he described the retention, where he planned to have the drainage, is going to be directly behind my bedroom. And that's just unacceptable. My main concern and other residents' concerns is the safety of our children. What is this retail shop is going to bring? Is it going to bring people, you know, enticed to crime, such as burglary and theft? We are concerned about our privacy in the neighborhood. In majority of those homes, the bedrooms, the master bedrooms, is directly in the back of that gentleman's property. And it's about less than 15 feet to where his fence is, that partition my property from what he's speaking about. And also we're concerned about the front of 14th Street and the entrance. There is a school bus stop there. We have primary age school children all the way up to high school children. So we're concerned about the traffic, increased traffic, trying to get to the retail plaza and possibly, you know, interfering with the school bus stop during the school year. So we have our homes built already in front of an industrial park, which is majority noisy Monday through Friday. We do get some peace and quiet Saturday and Sunday, but we're concerned about the noise level that might, you know, incur from the retail shop, the construction as well. And if for some reason we would consider, I heard him wanting to do landscaping to do buffering. We asked that a 9-foot brick wall be built if this do move forward for our privacy. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Good evening. My name is Sabrina Elmore. I live at 1413 Northeast 32nd Terrace. I don't agree with the with this property being rezoned because my backyard is right behind the property. And during the wintertime, I can look and see the building from the trees because it's really not that much space. But my privacy will be invaded because my bedroom, my son's bedroom, my bathroom window is all facing the back of that property. Like as we say, we are homeowners, we're not renters. You know, this is a big investment I did. I was a single mom. I got my first house by myself, and I don't want a business coming in, raising up our property taxes, and invading my privacy. Like she said, we have kids in the neighborhood. We have kids running around, but it's just going to be so much noise. We already hear noise from the industrial park, like she said, but if we have a business right behind our bedroom window, we don't know what the hours of operation is. Like she said, theft and crime. Anytime there's a business open, people are tempted to break in and do all kind of stuff, and we don't want that around our neighborhood because as of right now, we have no break-ins, no kind of problems in our neighborhood. And that was our privacy and our safety of our children. Like she said, bus stops up to the front. I got an elementary school and a high schooler, and I really don't want all that traffic coming back and forth right next to our neighborhood that may cause accidents or other problems. So that's pretty much what I have to say.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Pete, just kind of on that, what's the buffering requirements for?
25 feet landscaping or 10 feet with a 6-foot wall, masonry wall.
Okay.
And landscaping.
Right. And that's all the way around the site. It's around the retention pond. Around the retention pond, that's got to be fenced in, obviously.
Yeah, there are requirements for fencing retention.
Yeah.
If the retention area is deeper or steeper than 4-to-1 side slopes and deeper than 3 feet, it'd have to be fenced. Anywhere that it abuts property that's used or zoned residentially, it would have to have a buffer. So on one full side to the west, full side to the north, and almost half of the site to the east.
I have to ask, this is a for or against petition? It's an against, okay. We've heard both, so I was just asking for...
And to address her concern, are there hour restrictions in B2?
No.
Hours of operation, no.
What's the most intense use in B2?
There could be alcohol sales. On-premise alcohol sales would probably be the most intense. Would not allow any of the outdoor sales type uses, like the auto dealership or... it's community business, so... any type of retail, restaurant, hardware.
Okay.
Clothing.
Yes.
Pete, what, off the top of your head, what are the requirements if, for the sake of argument, if you took B2 back a certain distance and you left it R3, I guess, in the back or something like that? What are the lot size requirements based upon code?
No lot size requirements for B2.
But how about R3?
Frontage requirement for R3.
Yeah, we have the...
70 feet for a single family residential?
For a single family.
75.
For a single family, it's 75.
Five, yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, is it possible? I mean, it's certainly possible to have a parcel with two different zonings on it.
Sure. It's possible.
I mean, I don't know that would necessarily be helpful in,
yeah, what would be the point?
Except,
Well, I guess if there was concern about the B2 getting too close to the residential areas.
The depth of the use.
Yeah. I mean, while everybody has expressed the, you know, that there's going to be a retention basin back there and the 25, I mean, I think I just wanted the information. Because you can still put retention basin in an R3.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Offside, right? I mean, from a, you know, I mean, it's all one parcel, so it's not even offside.
But there wouldn't be any way to do that based on the frontage requirements then. If you had the R3 in the back.
He doesn't have a road. He doesn't have any frontage in the rear. So.
Yeah, well, right. but it's not a separate parcel. But it's not a separate parcel.
Well, I'm sorry.
It's not a separate parcel. So your lot would still be based upon the frontage on 14th Street.
Wouldn't you have to replat a separate parcel in order to give it a different distinct zoning? No?
No, you don't have to do that.
We've had lots of parcels that are divided in half by
two. I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of examples on here, but I mean, I mean, based on what I've seen in the past on other properties that have been developed, and from looking at this property and looking at where, you know, where the low areas are and where they aren't, I mean, I can't imagine there's not a significant amount of impact going too far to the north on this site.
Not having a conceptual plan as part of it.
I know I spent a good bit of the 9 years that I worked for the planning department going in and changing those chopped up zoning parcels, you know, that had, you know, the zoned in phases from B2 to R3 to R1, you know, to step it back and just going back in and trying to straighten that out and just make it one consistent. When were those houses built?
2006.
2006, I thought so. The you know, and they were built next to an industrial development, and I would certainly, from the sounds of it, the way the code is set up for the buffers that are required between the B2 use and the residences, either 25 foot with vegetation, which includes trees and hedges, or 10 feet, which includes a fence, that gives pretty good bit of protection, you know, and privacy, helps protect the privacy for the residences there. And if the property's draining towards the north to that low area, then not too many engineers. There may be a few that would try to run the water back to the north, back to the south, but most of them will run it to the low spot. And it sounds like that there's not that much of it that would be disturbed, you know, along the buffers and in the back. So I'm hearing the concerns. It seems like the code addresses those concerns for the most part enough to satisfy my hesitancy.
Patty, is there a lesser intense zoning classification that would let him accomplish his object? And I sort of keep going back to the parallel road to this, which is Southeast 17th Street. And in a similar situation with residential like that, we wouldn't be approving a B2. I mean, City Council kicked back professional office the other day on 17th and 22nd. A little more residential, but it's, you know, pretty similar situation.
Well, you don't have as much depth in that situation. I think that...
Well, it's the opposite. It's a wide and shallow lot.
Right.
But you've got 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 homes abutting this, where in that situation we have 3. And granted, larger tracks.
You have B2 adjacent to this or abutting it to the east.
Yeah. But is there a transitional
industrial?
I mean, you know, remember this, we're going more to mixed use, land use, and zoning theory, and this is a mixed use district. The scale is going to be dictated partially by the size of this property. As as Patty said, there are a lot of considerations that we have that really come down the road. They come at the site plan, and by granting the zoning change, you're not approving the site plan. Unfortunately, as you know, we don't get the site plan when we change
right.
the zoning, which that's just the way I guess that it is. But there are things that he's going to have to satisfy. You know, he's going to have to modify, as he stated, he plans to modify the access point. Well, whenever new construction comes in, it's going to be modified anyway. There may be some changes that are required in 14th Street to the turning movements that are allowed now. I'm not sure. I don't know that for sure, but those things would be considered, and that may affect the size, the layout. There are different, you're constricted by the orientation of this parcel, obviously, and then going to be by the slope. So, you know, it wasn't as if we didn't have questions, but we felt that given the surrounding land use classifications, the low intensity designation and its allowance for mixed uses, that it was appropriate this site.
I am ready for a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move that we agree with staff and approve, recommend approval.
Second.
Okay, we've got a motion and a second. Any discussions? Okay, call the roll.
Mr. Kesselring?
Aye.
Mr. Gibney?
Aye.
Mr. Adams?
Aye.
Mr. Batsell?
Aye.
Mr. Howell?
Aye.
Mr. Greiner?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay. Moving on to the comp plan. Mike, you finally get to do something here?
Let's do something.
I'm Mike Daniels, Growth Management Department. I'd like to submit staff comments for CPTA 13-2. Mr. Chairman, at the June meeting, I made a presentation, PowerPoint presentation, where I went through, you know, the history of why we're doing the year-based amendments and, you know, a little bit of the highlights in terms of some of the major policy changes that we're proposing. My plan for this meeting is to, again, sort of provide a real brief history, but not repeat and go through my PowerPoint, as long as the board is okay with that.
I don't know. Are we okay with that?
He has a sore brief throat or something.
Presentation.
Oh, he's got a sore throat?
Something's wrong.
Oh, then do the full-blown one then.
No. Only if you have a horse.
Okay, so you're okay with that? So I'll just briefly go through it. That way we'll
yes.
leave
more time. Yes, I know you've got to go to the tennis courts at 7, so go ahead and get the brief one.
Okay, well, back in January of this year, the city adopted changes to the future land use element, transportation element, and the parks open space element, as well as other elements, but those were the main three. As one of the initial implementation strategies of the Ocala 2035 vision. As I mentioned in the last meeting, the idea initially when we started going through the Ocala 2035 visioning process was that we would combine the visioning process with the state mandated requirement that we would submit the evaluation and appraisal report, which is an evaluation of all the elements of the comprehensive plan. Now, while we were going through the visioning process, there were changes at the state level, which moved our mandated submittal deadlines back a couple of years. So what the city decided to do was move forward with what we called the vision-based amendments, which were future land use, transportation, and rec and parks, which were the more transformative amendments, move forward with those amendments with the understanding that once those were approved, and once we got to our submittal deadline, we'd come back with the year-based amendments. So now that the vision-based have been approved, we're now coming back and going forward with the remainder of the comprehensive plan amendments, or comprehensive plan elements, which include the housing element, the infrastructure sub-elements, which would include water, sewer, groundwater, stormwater, and solid waste, and the conservation and intergovernmental coordination elements. Unlike the changes we made, especially with future land use and transportation, which were really, like I said before, transformative changes, really changed the way we view development, focus, you know, for example, focusing less on use and focusing more on design, instead of trying to restrict development and being very concerned about traffic concurrency and things like that. In specific areas of town, we really want to encourage a lot of intensity, a lot of development. So those were really more transformative changes. The changes we're proposing to these elements are really more about taking out a lot of the duplication, trying to remove a lot of the outdated information that no longer applies. A number of these elements we have not changed or done anything with in 20 years. So we needed to go in and kind of basically clean them up. At the same time, you know, we do also want to make them consistent with, you know, some of the strategies that we created with the Ocala 2035 vision. Now, on May 23rd, we had a community meeting, which was attended by 10 to 15 citizens. Predominantly, it was engineers. They had a number of comments and a lot of questions, but for the most part, it was you know, all of the changes were favorably received. And with that, the documents that I included in your packet included a clean version of all the elements, as well as an underlining strike-through version of each element. We also included kind of a cheat sheet summary of proposed changes and a list of all the statutory changes which have taken place since the mid-80s. With that, I'd like to open the floor to any questions you have on any specific elements or any of the specific policies.
Mr. Do you have all your questions?
I got a few. But I just, most of them are more like why questions.
Okay.
But like for instance in the, and this is just when you, in your summary in the very beginning, the only question I really had, I believe, was related to remove policies regarding flow of untreated water runoff into drainage wells. Mm-hmm. And I just was curious as to why that's removed. Is that something that's redundant, that's somewhere else, or?
Yeah, basically the issue there was we have a policy that states specifically that we have to comply with the state statutes. Mm-hmm. And it would encompass all of that information. That's why we, in that particular question, we basically combined that with that.
And that's, I only have four questions, so this is one of them. But on the drainage wells, mm-hmm. under policy 2.2, you remove that whole section about getting rid of drainage wells. Is it the city's intent now that they are going to continue to use the drainage wells, Brian?
Basically, from talking to the Public Works Department, we have all of the untreated drainage wells are now being treated. So, okay.
So you met the requirements because, and I don't have it right in front of me, but I think it said that either you were going to cap them or treat them.
Yeah, we were going to either eliminate them or treat them.
So that's why you removed that element, is because you met them.
Yeah, we met that, and then moving forward, then we'll meet all of the state requirements.
Well, I'd like to go through these as quick as possible because, I mean, I do have a few questions. Like I said, some of them are just why questions. In the housing element, policy 3.3, the fair housing ordinance, where it talked about the city shall adopt a fair housing ordinance. What exactly is that? What would that do?
A lot of the policies in the housing element, I mean, one of the main goals with the housing element was to assist our community revitalization staff in terms of what they do. And one of the main things that they do is they're applying for various grants, either state grants, federal grants, things like that. And one of the requirements in most of the grants that they apply for is that we have a fair housing ordinance. Currently, we don't. And what that would do is that would stipulate specific requirements to avoid, you know, discrimination in housing practices and those types of issues. Basically, we're in violation of HUD currently by not having a fair housing
ordinance. What's the process of adopting that ordinance?
It would come to this board and it would go to council.
So that's something that we're going to see in the future?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Before a lot of information.
Before 2035.
Before 2035.
I think we have a date on that one.
Okay, in the potable water sub-element, policy 1.1 talks about going from residential water demands from, it talks about going to 100, which I don't know what GPCD stands for, but I know when I looked at what was struck through, that was down from 176, which I'm mm-hmm. assuming this is per day.
Yeah, it's gallons per capita per day.
Capita per day, yeah. And I was just asking it, Is this because non-residential uses are excluded?
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, pretty much for residential uses, it's 100 gallons per capita per day, and that's the standard that our water and sewer department
uses. And so before, it was residential and non-residential?
It was residential and non-residential, and with non-residential, it's very difficult to really put a number on that because it's
so was
really
it higher before because the non-residential uses were included?
And yeah.
Generally, the residential uses would be lower, so really they haven't really changed. It's just there was a higher threshold because both were included.
Yeah, I mean, basically, it was very confusing before because again, it's pretty hard to really quantify the commercial because it really depends on the use. We're required in terms of level service for residential, so that's why it's much more straightforward just to focus on the residential because then we have a specific number that we look at. And that's why we changed it. Okay. With the non-residential, it gets a little bit more confusing.
Kind of like figuring horse manure.
and it's not required, so we didn't.
Okay, so then in policy 3.4, you're again talking about adopting another ordinance, which is an irrigation ordinance. That's something that would come through here?
Yeah, and that actually did come through here, if you remember.
Okay. Yeah, yes, because I remember having the discussion about the rain gauges and how they fail and who's going to come and tell you that you're screwing up because your rain gauge failed.
Yeah, basically the whole discussion there had to do with the state came up with a model ordinance. Mm. They wanted all the municipalities to pass them. We had some discussion here. They also had some discussion at council. Ultimately, it didn't get passed. One of the issues there, especially for the Water and Sewer Department, is in terms of looking forward and looking for working with the state on various issues, these are the types of things that they push back. The language we use for the irrigation ordinance, for the most part, we wanted to use very strong words. We wanted to use shall. If you notice in the irrigation ordinance, we use the word may because, we already went through once and it didn't go forward. So we use the word that we may adopt that ordinance, but at this time, it's kind of up in the air.
And what is water accountability rate? When you're talking about the fee payment at 95%,
water accountability.
I just don't know what that means.
What they're getting at there is through their billing system, there's a certain amount of water that the city is providing that's not being accounted for. So people are getting water and they're not paying for it. So what we want to make
sure. How does that
happen? Well, through the billing system, there's glitches in the system. Something's happening. Where
the guy's just asking. He's not asking how to do it. He's just asking.
How
to get the free water? You're not asking how to get the free
water. I would like free water. No, I'm just curious. Yeah, I am curious how it happens.
Water going out that's not being charged for.
Yeah, basically.
It's water going out. They don't know where it's going.
So you're trying to get to a point where you're accounting for 95% of the water.
At minimum, 95%.
Now, that could be lost in leaks to the main lines.
There could be some of the things like that as well.
And that's the same thing. I had the same question with the sewer thing, so that's obviously the same mm-hmm. situation. Okay. And then I also had the same question about the average daily rate drop from 95 to 80 for the sewer, but there was no non-residential uses included in the old.
Yeah.
So we're just saying, now you're saying that you want the residential uses to go from 95 to 80.
Yeah. Now we're just making it consistent. Before it wasn't. But the number that we use is 80.
That's a realistic
mm-hmm. That's number. The number that our water and sewer department needs.
What happens if it doesn't?
Well, I mean, basically the sewer is essentially just a calculation off of the water. So it's really the water.
Right.
So if at some point in the future we determine that that's not the, that number is not correct, mm-hmm. then we'll come back and make that change.
Okay. Now, I'm a big advocate of connecting to the reclaimed water lines for irrigation and whatnot. You're talking about having to connect within 1/8 of a mile. Where do those lines, where are they now? Is there a way to look at those? Or?
We have lines. There are lines. There's three water reclamation facilities. There's lines through over by Derby Gant. That's one area where there's some lines. And actually, the new Publix that just went in, they have reclaimed water. There's also that residential subdivision on the east side of 36th Avenue.
Right.
So there are lines there. Then there are lines over at ORS, the west part, the park out 60th Avenue.
Beyond 60th.
Beyond 60th Avenue. Those are the two areas.
Is there going to be a push from the city to try to extend those lines? Because obviously going forward, some of these other requirements you're talking about in here somewhat demand that you extend these lines and allow people to connect to them, or allow people the opportunity to be able to connect to them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just assuming that this isn't all just something that we've written down and hope that it happens, that
no.
The city has some kind of plan to actually extend these things.
Yeah, we have plans, and the Water and Sewer Department has plans, but before there was no requirement that you had to hook up the water to reclaimed water. Mm-hmm. This would require you to hook up to reclaimed water if you were within the connection.
Right, well, yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. I mean, if there's a requirement, but there's no line.
Yeah, if there's no line mm-hmm. within a quarter mile, then they wouldn't have to connect. Or within an eighth of a mile.
And just to jump in there, from a cost standpoint, what would it cost a homeowner of a small residential tract to hook up to the reclaimed water line? I mean, their irrigation.
Well, the idea behind the reclaim lines would be the same as if they connected to the sewer lines. It would actually be cheaper for them because the end user would pay less because it's reclaimed. It's not the regular water. And right now, we currently have connection requirements of a quarter mile and an eighth of a mile for water and sewer. So it wouldn't be any change. It would just be requiring people to connect to reclaimed when they're within the quarter and eighth of a mile requirement.
Okay. I think I only have a couple more. The water in the natural groundwater aquifer recharge sub-element,
mm-hmm.
the in policy 2.1, it talks about water quality monitoring program. So the city says the city reserves the option to require this WQMP based on proposed or permitted use types. This is something that they would require someone who's developing a site to pay for? Is that what this is saying?
Yeah, these would be, water quality monitoring program. These would be on sites where there were geological characteristics, like, for example, some of the areas where we have sinkholes or caves, things like that. That's where we would have additional requirements.
Well, I mean, does it say anything? Does it talk about that being limited to those kind of sites? Because my concern would be, say you have a property next door that you don't really want to be developed, and then you go to the city and claim this or that and demand that they, get this water quality monitoring program to, somehow limit development or hinder development or slow the process down. I guess that was kind of my concern. Concern was that I could kind of see it going in that direction possibly if somebody were to want to slow something down, especially a bigger development in the city, because I didn't see any language that talked specifically about there being some, geological concerns.
Yeah, now we do have a different section where we do talk about some geological areas. This particular policy we haven't changed. I mean, the only thing we changed about it was, putting the city shall, which was really more of a formatting issue. Certainly that's something, if that's a concern, we can look at it and possibly remove it or maybe possibly change some of the language. For the most part, what we went through and did was try to, get rid of all of the language that we felt was duplicative.
Yeah.
Okay. And there are some things we did change.
Well, I mean, so obviously this has not been an issue.
It hasn't been an issue in the past.
It only comes up on big, it's mostly come up on big sites.
Yeah.
On like Red Oak or the Becerra property.
Do you anticipate it being more than those six or seven sites that you listed in the slide?
I don't, although,
I mean, to address Nate's concern, if those are primarily the ones that you're concerned about, you could list them in this section also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we could put them in there.
identify, and that way we keep it from getting out.
I think Heathbrook had one, Mike, and Bell Chase.
Bell Chase is on the list, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I could see it as being kind of one thing lead to another and really bog down somebody that was planning to do something. I mean, one person, I think, could really throw a kink in the whole process. But then the next in policy 2.2, that integrated pest management program, it seems like there was some language before with fertilizers and herbicides and pesticides that is not in there anymore. Is that?
Yeah, the reason we took it out was just, you know, because this is a higher level, this is a comprehensive plan. A lot of the language in the code or in the land use or in these elements sometimes was very detailed for a comp plan. You know, we require the IPMP, but then once you get down to zoning code, that's when you can have a little bit more of the detail typically. So that's what we tried to do. We tried to, you know, keep the general principle that, okay, yeah, we may require an IPMP, but once we start getting to the specifics, that would be spelled out in the zoning code. Okay. That's the reason we removed some of that language.
Okay. And then this is, I think, basically what we had asked before about the stormwater and the stormwater runoff into the aquifer in the stormwater management sub-element.
Mm-hmm.
Objective 2, city shall protect the groundwater quality through quantifying discharge limitations monitoring. My question was this, does still address treatment of stormwater?
You're talking about policy 2.5? Which one?
Well, there isn't a policy 2.5.
2.5 is missing.
So it was 1.2.
Oh, it's under stormwater.
2.4?
I was more asking the question just in general about that the whole objective too. I think it was maybe, I don't know if it was in there before.
There's the policy, the city shall continue to monitor groundwater quality via monitoring wells and stuff.
Yeah, well, policy 2.2, which was changed significantly, says the city shall eliminate or filter drainage wells that allow untreated stormwater runoff to enter the aquifer.
Yeah, that's
all stricken.
Yeah, that's what my question, my assumption is they're all being treated now, so they actually met that requirement.
That's the assumption.
That's what he said.
I mean, we do have, in policy 2.5, we have the city shall remove and cap any unfiltered municipal potable water wells. Is that the section you're in, or which one?
That's on 2.5.
It's policy 2.2 under stormwater.
Okay.
You're looking at the red line section?
Yeah, I'm under groundwater. Yeah. We put it under groundwater, so let me look at 2 stormwater.
Are you under stormwater now?
I'm in stormwater management. Objective 2. The old policy 2.2.
Yeah, I mean, we put it, what we did is we changed it and we put it over into groundwater. We felt that was more appropriate for it than the.
I don't know, it's not really.
Oh, it's not numbered?
Well, I don't have that, so.
Okay.
It's towards this page right here.
That page.
Well, while we're on stormwater, Mike, could I ask you a question? You had eliminated the, under policy 2.6, you eliminated the buffers around sinkholes. Vegetated buffer strips around sinkholes.
Mm-hmm.
Was there a reason? I mean, what was the reason for that, or is that located somewhere else, or?
The way we saw that as something more that we would address in the zoning code, not in the comp plan. It was very specific, and that's why we took that out of here.
Yeah. Okay. I could buy that.
Do you think that it will make that into the zone?
Yeah.
Because I do think that's pretty important to try to maintain vegetative buffers around those sinkholes.
Stormwater management
things.
It's 83. That's a number of yours.
Okay. Yeah. Lisa, right. You pointed out also that we do have.
I go back.
Where's the DEP comment? Yeah, we have a comment in here about meeting all of the state requirements. So some of these things are going to be addressed.
And 3.1, is that what you're talking about? 3.1, water retention areas for all new or expanded development shall be constructing. Okay, gotcha. Okay, and then my last question had to do with the conservation portion. I don't know what a municipal tree is.
A tree within the within the city right away.
Okay.
So in other words, we've talked, and one of the things we've actually got recently, I think I mentioned this last month, that we got a tree grant to look at, to do a survey of the trees in the downtown area. So, you know, ultimately, we would like to do a survey of all the municipal trees within the city.
We're going to get Phil to count all the trees and name them.
I'd be happy to.
Probably get some kids to do that for free.
I'd be happy to, but I don't think they'll select me for that contract.
And I probably know the answer to this, but on policy 5.2, you eliminated all the language there talking about removing any tree over 4 inches without permit, et cetera, et cetera. Is that because that's just going to be handled somewhere else?
That's in the code. So, you know, again, it was just a lot of information. What we really want to say is we will ensure the protection of the trees through the tree ordinance.
Okay. And then my very last question, policy 2.2 and conservation. When it's talking about reducing air pollution from automotive traffic, what is the city currently requiring as far as bike lanes and additional space on sidewalks for bikes? I mean, I know some of the new roads have them, but I also know that, you know, there's a lot of roads that don't have bike lanes in the city.
Typically, we address that when we have a major road project. We wouldn't do it. Now, there is some requirements, like with the shopping center, they have to provide bike lanes. But other than that, it's typically when we have a new roadway project, then we would, at that point, require roadway projects.
Is there any way?
Determine whether or not we need bike lanes.
Is there any, I think I talked to somebody about this before, and there's some people that are in favor of putting the bike lane in the road, which I believe requires more impervious area than a bike lane on a sidewalk.
Yeah, with the consultants we've met with over the last year, there's a lot of change in how they feel about where it's actually appropriate to put a bike lane, when it's appropriate to put a bike lane, and you'll hear the term now a lot of times, complete street, thrown around. Sometimes they're just a sign, share the road. Speed's low enough that you really don't have to put a dedicated bike lane so a person could ride a bike on the street, even a person, you know, just a transportation, not the bicycle who's a cyclist who's just cycling. On a road like Pine, for instance, they felt that bike lanes probably weren't appropriate at all because of the speed of the traffic.
And because of the amount of curb cuts.
And the number of curb cuts. So either one of your scenarios, either at the back of the sidewalk, where it would require an additional width to the sidewalk, still because of all those curb cuts, it wouldn't necessarily be appropriate. And then on some of the streets, like 31st has a bike lane, but it's a 45 mile an hour. But because there aren't so many curb 40, cuts, yeah. 40, yeah, it was more appropriate there. We've done both. We've used multi-purpose trails and put the bike lane on it. It requires a couple of more feet of pavement inside the curb.
It's also more expensive. It's a little bit harder.
Well, I mean, my point is this. I mean, if you're going to say that you want to do this or that, if you want more people to use the gray water, if you want more people to ride their bikes and less people to ride cars, then you got to provide the infrastructure for people to be able to do these things. You can't just say this is what we want and not do it. It doesn't make any sense. Like, I mean, from my house, I have to go through a little strip of county to get to my office, and I have ridden my bike a couple times, and I'm not riding on the road at all. I mean, because that same road, I know people that have been hit by cars riding their bike. I mean, there's all kinds of people riding around like here, Tour de France, and those guys get hit by cars all the time. I'm not getting hit by a car. So, but I would be more inclined if there was a bike lane to ride there than this little strip, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not doing that.
Which street?
24th Street.
There's like interject. I mean, I agree with you completely on the details, but this is really just like large scale goals, long term planning type document.
We don't really
drill down.
I understand. My point is this. I'm not saying I think that you should write it all down in here. I'm just saying don't write it in here if you're not going to do it. That's my point. So if you're gonna write it down and you're gonna say this is the goal, then there's got to be some plan to actually implement these things to achieve that goal.
And the vision included this language. I mean, you know, that's what we took a lot out of here was, by this date, we will do this. Well, when we, I don't know what our batting average was on the things that we did do and the things that we didn't do. Mike probably has a better idea than me, but.
Well, one of the things we talked about and we've done and we've started to do is the development of the CRA, the community redevelopment area in the west part of the city as well as the east part of the city. So the idea behind those CRAs would be that we will be able to generate money to be able to do some of these projects. And we will also, as part of this, we'll be going through and setting up community planning groups like we did with West Ocala. So as part of those various projects, we will be able to have, you know, be able to meet with neighborhood residents and also have the money to be able to do some of the improvements that we're talking about in here. So those could be examples where, you know, these are, you know, these are areas we need bike lanes, and then we will drill down and make sure that the detail is going to be something that is going to be safe for bike riders and is going to encourage people.
And it was a big part of the 2035 plan wasn't, you know, didn't disband, it didn't say get rid of all the cars, but it did say, look, we don't have great sidewalk networks, we don't have great cycling networks, and we need to pay more attention to public transit. And so it, all of those things, maybe not for this reason that you pointed out, but we do pay attention to those, and as we get into things like form-based code, we do, you know, we're trying to make sure that we consider each one of those things, but they all do get different treatments, and some of them, you know, sometimes there will be just a sign that says share the road with cyclists, and sometimes there's room for a bike lane. We're going to run into problems, practical problems, where we don't have sidewalks at all in some places in that are very residential, and we know we need them, and we know that we have in the core area sidewalks that aren't adequate in terms of width to be able to do what we want to do. And so one of the things that we've been battling in terms of implementing some of the comp plan things, some of the 2035 vision things is, hey, we're going to have to make a provision that says if you build a new building, you're going to have to make the sidewalk wider. What's the effect of that going to be, especially if you had an infill site where you're going to have to maybe slightly move the building back to reserve the ability to have more sidewalk?
Yeah, well, I mean, I just know the city, you know, the city provided a recycling program that I think a lot of people have, you know, embraced, yeah, and I think has worked really well. And I think that if some of these other things, particularly the, you know, the reclaimed water, if those kind of things were pushed, if the infrastructure was provided, I think that people would.
The trunk, you know, infrastructure is the biggest issue there, getting the infrastructure
to. It's just, yeah, the amount of, I mean, you can, oh, yeah, you can get more reclaim, you just have to increase fees.
Right.
And of course nobody wants to increase water and sewer fees.
And if drilling a well's easy, that's the problem, is drilling a well's so cost effective for the end user that it's just easier for them to drill a well, an irrigation well, and not use city water for irrigation or reclaimed. I think a lot of people will, it's like you said, they'll embrace it. But you have to make it available, and it has to be, the price has to be right in the ballpark. So, I mean, I know that, you know, we have an enterprising water and sewer director who, you know, in a lot of ways would like to get rid of some of the, even talked about getting rid of the distances with us so that he could negotiate running water lines and sewer lines to places regardless of how far they were. And I think that it doesn't prohibit him from doing it. We talked him into, well, make sure that if they're within a quarter mile or an eighth of a mile, they have to connect. But so we want to keep those in, and hopefully we'll have the money to extend some of the
grid. Well, if the language is in the comp plan, then that keeps the door open so that when the capital becomes available, you've already got it identified as a goal, you know. Mm-hmm. Okay, this is something that we need to use that money for. So if it's not in there, it's hard to.
No, I agree. I don't have a problem with it being in there.
Putting pipe under the ground gets really expensive, especially when you have to cross roads and things like that. That's been the big issue.
Well, I know all of you got a bunch of questions now too, so I'll turn it over.
You asked a lot. Andy's got something, right?
Oh,
no, you're good.
You got them all.
Okay.
Well, I just have one minor, and everything that I saw, the questions, only a few I had were addressed, but it kind of seemed, and it didn't strike me until later, but it kind of seemed like another element kind of dealing with disaster preparedness or response, mm-hmm, may fit with a comprehensive plan. And I know we've got I know between all the city and the county and OPD and the sheriff's office and the fire department, I know that everybody has a plan in place, but is that something that could be addressed in the comprehensive plan to kind of, with everything that we see on our nightly sky falling news happening around the country, just to have some kind of plan in place and a cop plan?
Most of the coastal counties have them. We've
never had it. Yeah, like you said, we do have a plan, but yeah, we've never included. It's never been a required element of the plan. And for the most part, most of the comp plan elements are really all about development review to an extent. Now you kind of go out with when you get into environmental.
It's something we could discuss with the agencies who handle the disaster preparedness and see if, I mean, I think it would probably have to be city count almost like a joint plan, because that's how they do disaster preparedness anyway.
The regional planning does a lot of that.
Yeah, NRPC.
I mean, aren't we an area where people from the coastal counties come to? How's that?
Practice.
We're the safe zone.
Yeah, exactly. Seriously. So,
When I say what kind of triggered it in my mind was the we're talking about intergovernmental coordination, and we're planning. Obviously, most of it is a planning document, but planning to have a plan is important too in a disaster type scenario. So it just kind of seemed like an element that may fit. And mm-hmm. If this isn't where it belongs, that's fine. But it's just an idea.
Or even just a policy statement.
What we can do is, I mean, we do this separately and then explore and bring back a report to you guys on what we find out about doing that. Possibly prepare an element or sub element.
So do we need to...
They're asking for approval, so Mr. Chairman, I'll go ahead and recommend that approval.
Did we not have any changes?
Well, yeah, actually, Mr. Gibney, you had suggested a change regarding, you wanted to add the sinkholes
the definitive site environmental.
Weren't they in there on one of those sections?
Yeah, they were.
They were, but there was another.
They were under stormwater, but I think
those six sites or whatever.
Add them someplace.
Okay, we'll go ahead and add them.
I think that was the only one though.
That was the only change.
Yeah, I think that was the only one.
Okay,
so we go back through real fast.
Mandatory bike lanes.
Yeah, mandatory.
You did a good job.
Not too concerned about the bike.
Oh no, yeah.
All right, so you want to amend your
motion? That's part of the motion to include that one change.
Okay. Got that? Okay. We got a motion?
Second.
And a second. Call the roll.
Mr. Kesselring?
Aye.
Mr. Gibney?
Aye.
Mr. Adams?
Aye.
Mr. Batzel?
Aye.
Mr. Howell?
Aye.
Mr. Kleiner?
Aye.
Motion carries.
And any...
Back on our discussion about the horse and there, would somebody have a chance real quick, maybe in the next 10 days, to take a look and see where the caves and the sinkholes are at Belle Chasse in the proximity to... I thought there was one in that in that area, but that's been a long time ago.
I don't think it's on the property that Fred was representing. Okay. I think it's on the right. Next property to the north.
Okay. There was more than one cave.
There's more than one feature, at least to the aquifer.
One that was on that property. I could be wrong, and that's just what I'm...
Yeah, we can look at it.
That's just what I'm asking you to check on to see if there is anything of concern there, with the approval tonight, if a buffer would be, possible.
Okay.
Okay.
Are they going to have to go through site plan with that?
No.
It's a residence, but it's also barns and a...
Yeah, they had submitted. We're looking at it. It's
okay. I mean, I'm in favor of the use. I just wanted the, some protection.
Okay. Everybody good?
All right.
We're adjourned.
All right.
So Rose, the city council turned down my request for 22nd.
They're looking at
it.
I think it was 4-1 against.
They're looking at buying it. The city buying it and making it into